Welcome to The Relaunch with Hillary DeCesar. Get ready to be inspired. In the next hour, Hillary and her guests will share their stories and reveal tools to help you achieve your own relaunch and success. Now, here is your host, Hillary DeCesar.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to today's show. And I got to tell you, imagine this. Imagine something as a fluke situation happens to you and it changes the trajectory of your life. Okay. Because that's what we're talking about today. Jill Griffin is with me. She has 20 plus years in busting through the BS, which stands for not what you're thinking about, although it kind of is, your belief systems, and building a culture from strengths of both the team, for the, both the team and leadership. And she's responsible for creating repeated, consistent results. She's worked with brands that you all know. We're talking Coca-Cola, Microsoft, Hilton Hotels, to name a few. And Advertising Age recognized Jill as one of the 25 women to watch. Oh yeah, we got her here today. And she was named one of the 50 most influential people in content marketing by NewsCred. And so we are going to be getting into why she was a two-time winner of Adweek, Media Week's Media Plan of the Year. And what more importantly, she's going to tell you is her journey, her relaunch story is so impactful that we're going to be able to lean into what she's been through. And each and every one of you is going to come away from today's show stronger and able to really think about what's next for you without the fears that can keep you stuck in your present. How good is that? And also you might get some tips on how to actually increase your business and make it more attractive for people to want to come to you. Jill, welcome, welcome. What an intro, right? That was
I know. I love it. I'm like, I want to carry you around with me.
Seriously, I'm like reading it. And I remember reading it for the first time. And I'm like, ooh, dang, I like this woman. And then we talked and then we were like, we can talk about this and we can talk about that. So I got to say, this is so much fun for me because, you know, so many similarities in terms of backgrounds, in terms of what we stand for, even down to, I love your BS. And where I've got belief blasters, you've got BS, and so good. So excited to jump into today's show and impact everyone's lives that are listening.
I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with, what was that relaunch? What was that moment that literally changed your life?
So I'm going to say there are two moments and they are sequential. The first moment was, in my early 30s, I went on a vacation to Australia and I fell hiking. And that fell, if anyone's familiar with head injuries or brain injuries, they're insidious. So the impact in the moment and the moments after, okay, you feel concussed, you're not really sure.
Wait, can we go back to this fall? Hold on. How did you fall? Like what happened? Because I know you've talked a lot about it and it's always I fell. But explain, like, what was this fall?
Sure. So I had taken a solo trip to Australia. I was there for about 3.5 weeks. And at different points in the trip, I hooked up with local like ecotourism groups to do hikes. So I wasn't hiking by myself, but I was a solo trip, a solo traveler. And why that's important is that I wasn't able to advocate for myself. And there was no one there that knew me to advocate for me. And that's why I think that's important to also the part of the story. So we were out of Sydney, way up in the northeastern part of Australia. And it was sort of a mixture of like rainforest into then full on ocean. And it was mossy and slippery. So we were on a hike one day. So we had a base camp. And then each day we would take, you know, 3-hour hike, break for food, do another 5-hour hike and get back before basically sundown back into our camp. And, you know, a lot of it was like, you know, flora and fauna and creepy crawlies and all that good stuff.
Of course.
And of course. And we were coming up to a creek. And again, so this is where, you know, parts of this are fuzzy to me. So I don't, you know, I may say that you're like, well, that went, I don't know, because it was a brain injury. So, the creek was give or take about not more than my ankles. I had flipped my shoes as we were recommended to moving from our hiking boots into, you know, they're called, the ones I had were Tevas, but basically sure. like a hiking sandal so that you can go across water. And I had flipped those. And I think I was just moving too fast, which doesn't shock me when I think back of it. And, you know, I didn't have my full pack, but I had like my day pack on me. And I just like started out. And, you know, if you're walking through a small creek like that, those rocks are going to be slippery, mossy, et cetera. So I went from my feet almost like whoop, like cartoon leg. Like I didn't hit an elbow or an arm or a side. I went from feet to head, right? Totally out.
And just a then freak, literally a freak accident.
Just a freak accident. And then I rolled. So I rolled, I mean, it was probably 2 to 3 feet. I don't really know. It was what I was told after. I rolled off the side of the creek that was then coming down into like a small waterfall. And I remember coming out of it and there were other tourists. Some of them were in my hiking group and some of them were just other people that were enjoying, you know, the hike in that area. And they pulled me out and there was a lot of like, are you okay? And I think what's also important in this moment was when I went to Australia, I bought supplemental insurance that I remember it said if I needed to be medevaced out to get to safety, it was $250,000. That's with insurance, folks. Right. But and just so we're also clear, that money goes to the helicopter operator, right? For their effort, their gasoline, all of that to come in to risk, depending on the situation, to risk their safety into coming in. Right. So I was like, okay, that's never going to happen. So here I am post fall and I literally can see the paper in my mind that says $250,000 US. I'm like, I'm fine. Right. Because the only place to safety at that point would have been medevaced out. And just, you know, I laugh through a lot of this today because I have chosen by my mindset to make this entire experience a gift. And that I've chosen to find meaning in it because I've also had people come at me say, how could you say a brain injury is a gift? I'm not saying your brain injury is, I'm saying mine is. So I made that conscious.
You know, this falls so in line with the idea that people who've been through, you know, hell and back really, and I, you know, I had a show called The Silver Line to Relaunch. It's now the Relaunch Podcast. And every time I would ask the person, I'd say, you know, the silver lining, like, you know, would you go back and change anything? And they're like, no, because where I am right now. So you're nodding your head. You're like, yeah, I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't change anything.
But let me ask you. So right now you've been living with this head trauma for how long?
20 years.
20 years. And you
took me 11 years to get diagnosed.
Okay. So you... There's so much here. I mean, I got to say.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of doctors and specialists.
But Jill, what happened? So you chose not to be medevaced out. You chose not to.
Yeah. So I chose as someone who had a brain injury, because I've also had people say like, well, it's your own fault. I'm like, okay, the next time I have a brain injury, I'll remember to think clearly.
But yeah. You did know. Let me just ask you this. Did you actually know right away, hey, something's wrong with me?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So share with us what happened then.
I just felt, I mean, I felt banged up. Like if you've ever had a fall, you know, just even if you don't hit your head, if you just fall, there's that like surge of you know, all the neurochemicals that are in your body. So you feel that like adrenaline rush, you know, everybody in your body is doing what it needs to do to, you know, help the injury. I was, you know, I definitely had some abrasions that were already, you know, skin open and bloody, not major, nothing required stitches, but I was banged up. And then over the next couple of days, you know, as the bruises and stuff come to come out, I was like, oh, I got banged up more than I did, but more than I thought. But I think in that moment, you know, it's sure adrenaline. And yeah, I'm uncomfortable. Yeah. I kind of feel like, oh God, my head.
Did you feel like maybe you had a concussion?
Oh, I did have a concussion.
No, but were you thinking it's a concussion?
Oh, no, because if this ever happened again, I would think that. But in those moments.
I understand. You're just like,
I'm not thinking that.
So did you keep walking or did you go back and you're like, okay, I should be done.
So yeah, we were close enough back to the like base camp. One of the eco guides took me back. The rest carried on with their hike for the day. And I just kind of hung out at base camp, you know, some ice. Oh, he got some aspirin, drink a lot of fluid, you know, hung out with like the cooks and the little kitchenette thing. I mean, it wasn't a kitchenette. It was the outback. Right. But you know, it was just being there and just kind of, I think I was just in shock. Right. I was also in shock that I've come this far. I'm doing this trip. And is the trip ruined? You know, I'm probably in the last week of the trip. Right. So I had been there for quite some time and enjoyed a lot, but I was like, what's like, I guess there was a lot of questions, like how bad am I, but I don't feel good. And thinking to myself, okay, from here, I'm going back down to Sydney and I'm flying home out of Sydney, maybe being in a city or that kind of atmosphere where I'm not on rocky terrain, like maybe I'll be fine. Or maybe I just need a good sleep, not in a, like a hammock, but maybe I need a good sleep in a bed and just like, I'll be fine. Like that's kind of what my mindset is at that point.
Sure. And so you then go back to Sydney and did you start to have like, I mean, what caused you to say, there's something going on here. There's something not right.
So this is where parts are fuzzy. I want to say that I got back to Sydney 3 to 4 days later. And then I was going to be in Sydney for 2 or 3 days and then fly back home. And it's funny because I tried to find the dates, but I was using a different email address. So all of that old email and calendaring, I don't have access to it anymore. So I don't actually know. Got back to Sydney. I still wasn't feeling well. I really felt bad, but not bad enough to say I need to get home.
What were we talking? Like when you're saying I feel bad, you know, I felt badly. Like,
I have a splitting headache. I have brain fog. I'm feeling slurry with my words. I feel drunk and I've consumed no alcohol. I'm noticing that I can't read or watch TV. I can't do anything because I'm like, oh, I'll just get a good night's sleep in the hotel. But I can't. Watching TV is bothering me. It's making my symptoms work. I feel really dizzy and woozy. The hotel staff was like, do you need help? Because I kind of came in looking like a dish rag. You know, I'm coming from the outback and I'm, you know, messed up. I mean, you don't bring that many clothes with you when you're going on those kinds of hikes, right?
Oh, I understand that.
Right. So
I could just imagine you coming in and they're like,
someone actually said, can we get this woman medical attention? And I looked like, who's the woman who needs attention?
Right.
So I fly home and it was about 21 hours. I live in New York. So it's about 21 hours, 21, 25, whatever hours back to New York. And again, the same thing, like I just took like Tylenol PM, like just kind of was like, you know what? I'm just going to sleep. I'll just sleep. I'll be fine. So when I got back to the States, I was like, I'm going to go to my doctor's now and get checked out. And so this is maybe a week or 10 days. I'm starting to get doctor's appointments and they're all kind of saying the same thing. Yeah. It's post-concussion syndrome. It happens. Do this, not that, drink lots of water. Don't overexert yourself. I mean, it's a lot of the protocol we hear today, sure. Especially with children playing soccer and football, like making sure
my kids had many concussions, cheerleading, tennis, trampolines.
So all of that. So I'm like, okay, so I'm just gonna, you know, do what the doctor says and, you know, carry on moving a little slower, not really doing many things socially, except it's not going away. It's getting worse. And there was a couple of moments where there was one particular moment where there was coming out of marketing and advertising, there was a big industry party in the New York Harbor on a boat. And I remember going on that boat thinking nothing of it. And, you know, whatever, it was like a 3-hour kind of like booze cruise kind of thing. And I remember being so, like, having no control over my motor skills on that boat so bad that I was scared. Multiple colleagues were like, maybe you should stop drinking, thinking that I was drinking. I wasn't. And then when I got off the boat that night, I remember a particular colleague was like, are you all right? And I said, I'm actually not. And then he helped me, you know, hail a cab and was like, do you want me to get you home? And I'm like, no, I think I'll be okay. And I just remember never getting off the boat.
And this was how long after the accident?
A couple of months.
Okay.
Right. But it was like, again, it was slow and insidious, where more and more symptoms, if I was sitting there and wind was coming in and the curtains were moving, I would feel really woozy. If you had a ceiling fan on, I would be like, I don't know what's happening, but I can't be near that. If we went to a restaurant and there was a candle on the table, like, I'm the woman who's crushing the illumination in your soul and I'm blowing out all candles, because the flickering of the light against the bouncing light on the wall, can't do it. And washing dishes. Right? Classic New York City apartment. The dishwasher is my hands. So right. I'm feeling the thing to wash dishes and the swirling of that. I'm like, what is going on? This is so, I can't wash my own dishes. What is happening? I was sleeping, sitting up. I slept sitting up for probably close to 3 years, where I didn't even sleep in my bed. I nestled myself in a way so that my head wouldn't move in the corner of my couch, and just kind of tried to do like a beach chair, like a reclining sort of position, and going to doctors, and people just
being and the like, doctors are just not saying, they're just like, yeah, you still have it. They weren't,
they're just like, it wasn't getting answers. I was getting a lot of ghosting, which I don't have any anger for, because if you're taking on a patient and you feel like you can't help them, after a while, one or two visits, no one was returning my calls. Then I'd find another practitioner, go to another practitioner, same thing. I also had them the other side of, and we know this, that women tend to not be believed when they're talking about their medical conditions. Mm-hmm. And it's astonishing at the numbers. I don't have them off the top of my head, but there's a book called Do Harm, which I recommend everyone to read, about the impact of women in medical care and how they're not believed. I had one neurologist tell me to carry rocks in my pocket so that I would feel more stable.
Yeah. And the scans did not show anything.
Nope.
Okay. We have to actually take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to hear what progressed from this part where she's just like feeling lost. Like, hey, she's not being able to, Jill can't do the daily tasks anymore. And she had a huge job. And then what happened? You guys are going to want to hear what this next part is going to be about, because she's going to talk about something that you might even be facing in your life right now that you don't know about. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa. Play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
You have the power to be stronger, live fearlessly, and enjoy the benefits of a great life. Listen for Fearlessly Authentic with host Jody Harrison Bauer. Jody has proven at an age when many start to slow down that she is just getting started. With two grown daughters, a successful business that she started at 50, a finalist in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, and a two-time world bikini champion, she's ready to take you to the next level in your life. Fearlessly Authentic airs Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Empowerment.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to The Relaunch with Hillary DeCesar. Have a question for Hillary or her guest today? Join us on the show at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. We'd love to hear from you. Now, back to the show. Here again is your host, Hillary DeCesar.
Hey, everyone. We are talking with Jill Griffin. And when a fluke accident changes the trajectory of your life, and you're cast into a role that you never dreamed you had, and continue to fight for your life, fight for yourself in a world, as we were talking, Jill, right before, you mentioned a book, Doing Harm, and it's by Maya Dusenberry. Can you share a little bit more about what is going on? You're trying to figure out what the heck is wrong with you, and you're getting put rocks in your pocket to ground you. I'm like,
yeah. You're like, what the heck? Yeah. So again, I would say it was equal. I had just as many amazing practitioners who were like, I don't know. And then I had many practitioners who thought that I was emotionally unstable. And that would be like, well, the exact quote was, if you're feeling that unstable, maybe you should carry rocks during the day in your pockets. And I was like, okay.
We're talking, you're in a big city.
Oh, this was a neurologist at a major Manhattan hospital.
Yeah. We're talking like New York. We're not talking about, you know, an area that doesn't have doctors and trying to figure out, hey, can the regular, you know, doctor in the area do all this? We're talking specialist in some of the top hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then I remember one of my breaking points is my mother. So again, I'm in my early 30s. My mom, I'm single at the time. My mom says, I'm going to go with you, as if, you know, maybe she could help get some more information. So we go to this other neurologist, and he's my catalyst that I think, and it gets me very emotional, because he said, it's a version of vertigo, which is kind of true. It's a vestibular disorder. You will eventually get completely incapacitated. You need to avoid planes, trains, automobiles. So now I'm like, what am I in a John Candy movie? And buses. And I was like, I live on an island. It's called Manhattan. I need to be in planes, trains, automobiles in order to move around and to get there. And he's like, well, I've seen it before. You're going to eventually just be bedridden and that's it. And as he was still
like your death sentence, he's like sitting here.
As he was still
and your
talking,
mom and your mom, who was noticing all these, you know, crazy things that were going on with you, is like, I'm going with you, like in hopes that I can, you know, hear something that maybe you're not hearing.
Right, be my advocate, right?
Right.
And all of that, right?
Oh my God. And this is so what she hears. Her daughter is going to get, you know, she has something she can't get in planes, trains, automobiles, and it's going to get really, really bad.
Right. So he was still talking. I stood up and I said, I'm done. My mother was like, but wait, he's still talking. And I was like, no, I'm done. And I looked at the doctor and I said, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but you are not my God. And you don't get to tell me how my life is going to go. I'm done. And my mom, you can talk to him, but I'll meet you downstairs. I am done. And in that
moment, my God, baby.
I was like, In that moment, I took my power back. In that moment, I decided that I was going to be the hero of my own journey. And I was going to meet amazing people along the way, but they can't do it. I do it. And that was the first shift in.
This is so great. And this is how long into the journey that you said, you know what? You're not my God. And I'm taking this back. I'm reaching in. I have my own power.
I would say that was probably at the 3 or 4 year mark. And so it took me 11 years to actually get diagnosed with exactly what I broke in my skull. It took 11 years to figure that out. But the difference is my mindset changed where I knew I stopped putting the burden on you to heal me. I stopped showing up at doctors and specialist office thinking that you're going to be the one to tell me what it is. My energy, my attitude, my mindset shifted to let me take the necessary actions today to be one step closer to healing. Who do I need to see? Who do I need to speak to? What do I need to meet? What do I need to do? Where do I need to be? And being in that mindset of open, that maybe you know a doctor who you're like, Jill, I had a friend who had something similar to this, right? It sounds easy today, or maybe easier today because it's 2022. This happened in 2002, excuse me. So the access of our ability to like Google around for information wasn't, the books weren't there. I mean, today there's multiple vestibular support groups that I can share information with that wasn't available or wasn't easily found. So I was going literally to the library to try to find information because it was 2001 and it just wasn't information.
And at this point, are you, because you had this very successful career, what's happening with that?
So where it was hard is that I was exhausted. All of my energy was going into surviving so that I could keep my health insurance to stay employed. I needed to stay employed to keep my health insurance. So everything I was doing was about making sure that I could show up, that I could, you know, perform. And I was performing, but it was killing me. So that I really liked the work I did. And I really liked the people I worked with. And I liked my job, but they were getting the best of me. So I would like crawl to Friday. And then I would spend so much of the weekend in bed because I just
recovering.
Needed to recover. Recover.
But yeah, they yeah. knew that you had things that were going on, or were you hiding it from everybody? You were hiding.
No. So the job that I worked in right around the accident, I was terminated from because I was told I wasn't a team player because guess what? There was another boating event. And I was told by the doctor to not go on a boat because I also knew at this point, having been on a boat previously post-concussion, that the way I would explain it to people
is not a team player. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Which again, I just want to ground because I do not believe in 2022 that would happen today.
No,
this was
a different time. I agree.
Different time, right? So this idea that, remember, the only time that I can disclose if I choose to that I have a disability, and I don't know that I have a disability because I don't have a name for it because I haven't been properly diagnosed, right? So all of this is going on at the same time.
Vestibular did not come out until 11 years.
No.
Okay.
I was told that it was post-concussion syndrome, which is very broad, right? Okay. Where I found out ultimately, if anyone's curious, it's superior canal dissident syndrome, mal de Marquimont, and also benign positional paradoxical vertigo. So I have three different kinds of conditions going on based on the vestibular disorder that I create. But I literally broke the superior canals in my inner ears. I literally shattered them. So if you think about a garden hose with big rips off of it, so the tube is still there, but this big chunk's missing. And what I found out later is, think of it like a glass. If your drinking glass has a crack in it, over time, it's going to continue to deteriorate. And that's why when I first fell, I was off, but why it got worse in time is that it kept breaking down, which took 11 years because I needed the person who said, I know exactly what it is. And now I'm going to go prove it.
Okay. And
amazing story. I sobbed in his office.
When he finally said, this is what you have.
I had 11 years of MRI screens and data that because of some of my professional relationships, I was tapped off to a man, Dr. Timothy Hain, who works at Northwestern in Chicago. And I was told he did a lot of work on, you know, various athletes, you know, Chicago Bulls, Chicago Bears, right, with head injury. So I was told go to get to see him. It took a couple of months to get an appointment. I flew to Chicago. He had asked for all of my information before I got there. By the time I got into his office, he said to me, I know what you have, and I'm now going to prove it over the next 2 days. And I just sobbed.
Dr. Timothy Hain.
I mean, it's I'm telling you, like, I couldn't do enough in the end. Like, I catered them lunch. They were like, what are you doing? And I was like, what can I do to show my gratitude?
Yes. Knowing you now, I'm like, of course you did.
And then here's the other thing. I know we're jumping around a little bit, but here's the other thing. So I saw a 60 Minutes episode. I believe it was 60 Minutes. It was one of those news programs where there was an individual who sang for the London Philharmonic or something in London. And he was talking about how he can hear his eyeball moves, his hair move, his cheek move. And that's what I can hear. I can hear my eyeballs move. I can hear my facial muscle moves. If I brush my hair, I can hear the little, it's amazing. Cause you're like, I'm alive. The first time it happened, I thought it was
I love
enough.
That you're thinking that. I love how you just did. I call it a relaunch flip. You just took like, you know, I can hear everything too. It's amazing.
Amazing. The first time it happened, I thought there was like a critter in my apartment. I was reading a book and my eyes were going across the page and I kept hearing and I was like, what the heck? And then I would stop and it would stop. And I would look around and I was like, if there is a creepy crawly here, I'm going to freak out. I go back to reading. It started again. Then I realized I was like, oh my God, it's my eyeballs that are making the sound.
And this still is happening to you right now.
I mean, I'm talking, so I can't hear it, but if I was quiet, 100%, I would hear my eyeballs move. So I saw this man on 60 Minutes talk about, or this whatever news program it was, talk about that he has this condition and it had an impact to him because he was singing and it was really impacting. And I was singing in a gospel choir in New York City. And I was also finding it really hard because the vibration of my own voice and the sounds in my own head was too intense. And I eventually had to stop singing. But hearing that, and then hearing that he went to Dr. John Carey, who is at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, because he's the world-renowned guy to fix this thing that I think I might have, but I'm not diagnosed. And at the point I was unemployed, I was a freelancer, so I didn't have health insurance. And I was like, okay, I got to meet him. Someday I'm going to meet him. Okay. So cut scene, now like 5 years later, I'm in Chicago in Dr. Timothy Haynes' office. And he's like, yeah, so I diagnosed, but you need to talk to the surgeon, Dr. John Carey. And I was like, hey, from Johns Hopkins? And he's like, yeah, you know him? And I was like, yeah, but he's like got a 2-year waiting list. I mean, it's like, he's like, oh, puts him right on the box right then, calls him up and says, John, I got news for you. I mean, I literally, now I'm ugly crying again. These two men are probably like, what the heck is with this woman? Like, because for so long, when you have an invisible disability, and you,
first time you've said that. And I was waiting until you said it. Invisible disability.
Which, for clarity, according to the American Disabilities Association, is anything that gets in the way of your ability to perform your regular duties, right? So it is broad, but it is everything from vestibular disorder to IBS to fibromyalgia to severe migraines, back pain. Long COVID, anyone, as that's coming out, right? So we're talking about,
you said depression, anxiety, stress. Anxiety. I mean, we could all be checking the boxes, right. Checking the boxes of invisible disability.
Absolutely. So when you have an invisible disability where I represent, right? It's ableism. I represent as normal. You don't think there's anything wrong with me. You think I'm abled and therefore you think I'm normal. And
right. Looking at you, you look great. And even talking to you, you would never know.
Well, yeah, because I ain't tired. When I'm tired, I'm like a slurry. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, at least on this radio show, you're doing an awesome job. I would never know. You are nailing it, girl.
Thank you. So when you're constantly having to remind people of your needs, and they don't hear you because they don't get it. You don't have language to really explain what's going on. You don't have a diagnosis and you're not familiar with the idea of a non-apparent or invisible disability. And you have to constantly say to people, you know, could you turn off the ceiling fan? It's really giving me a headache. Well, we're hot, Jill. We want the ceiling fan on. Oh, okay. Right. So you're constantly advocating, but you don't know why. And as I was saying before, remember, within the employment process, the only time for me to disclose is upon hiring, which is also that big reject me now button, which is like, if you have a disability, disclose it now, right? Right. So there's no container as me as an employee for me to come forth to HR, growth, whatever the department is, to say, hey, when you hired me, I didn't need it, but now I need different support. And by the way, before everyone starts going, well, that's going to cost the company money, I'm a tax deduction, people, so don't worry about it. You get to say from diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? The inclusion part, that you are actually creating an inclusive workplace, which we know from data, when we have inclusive workplaces, that the people who are able-bodied feel better about a diverse environment. And the people that have disabilities are also feeling better, because when you employ someone with a disability, you employ everyone around them. It means that I'm no longer a drain to my family. I'm no longer a drain to other people, because now I'm able to support myself.
Okay, this is so good, because what you're saying is for companies, you know, they can check the box, it's tax deductible, you know, they can get all these tax benefits. But here, I want to make sure that, especially you being, you know, as much of an advocate for invisible disabilities, and as you said, you know, these, you know, apparent, the non-apparent disability, right? It's not there. It's like, we can't see it, so it must not be there. When people are listening right now, and they're like, oh my God, I am so stressed. I am completely depressed. I have high anxiety. How do you help people, or what would you suggest to somebody who's hearing you saying, I've never known this, and move forward with, like, you know, trying to have an understanding of, like, this is happening to me. What can people do?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I just want to be clear. I'm an executive coach and I'm a functional nutrition educator. So you got to go see your doctor. You got to bring it there, right? Explaining what you have. If you want to do some research and reading about invisible disabilities, or going to the American Disabilities Association and doing some research there and seeing when I say recognize, it doesn't mean that there are disabilities that are not recognized, but it's only so fast they can get them documented, right? So I would look there first. I would also make sure you see your doctor and have yourself, even if you don't have a diagnosis, start getting a track of what is going on for you. And then as far as the other parts, I mean, the work that I do with people today is that everybody has, well, almost everybody has something, whether it's physical or mental, that they're working through. And when you're in the world, I mean, some people, it shows up like people pleasing or imposter syndrome or incredible fear, or they have panic attacks, yet they're super successful and ridiculously smart and are performing in their jobs until these things happen. And maybe it happens with some frequency, so it's getting in the way of their ability to do their job.
But what are we saying happens? What would start to happen to say, wait a second, you know, what would that be?
So it's impossible for me to answer that question, because everybody is going to have a different thing. It could be stress. It could be burnout. It could be sleeplessness. It could be a vestibular disorder. It could be certain pains. When you're feeling that this is not just, I'm having a bad week and there's something chronic, again, obviously you need to go to seek out medical and get an allied, you know, medical practitioners for them to look and help you through that. That said, getting that actual support that way, whether, again, it's a mixture of therapy, whether it's a mixture of medical doctors or allied health practitioners helping you through that particular condition, what I have found for myself to be incredibly true, which is the first relaunch, is I started to put together that food and environment would impact my symptoms above my baseline.
Okay, hold on. This is so good, but we do have to take a quick break. Okay. So when we come back, we are going to actually, we're going to throw out a crazy statistic that you can then take a deep breath and realize, oh my gosh, I now understand what's going on with me. And then we are going to talk about food, environment, and what you can do if you're starting to feel like, hey, I might have an invisible disability, and we're going to give you actual steps to help you relaunch into a better phase for yourself. So when we come back, don't go anywhere, because this is going to be amazing.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Do you dream about success but wonder how to get there? Hillary DeCesar and her guests will reveal how they relaunched into lives they only dreamt about. Their stories will inspire and surprise you and ignite your inner sparks. The Relaunch, Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at blog.voiceamerica.com. That's blog.voiceamerica.com. The Voice America Press Blog. All access, all the time.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to The Relaunch with Hillary DeCesar. Have a question for Hillary or her guest today? Join us on the show at 888-346-9141. That's 888-346-9141. We'd love to hear from you. Now, back to the show. Here again is your host, Hillary DeCesar.
Hey, everyone. We are back with Jill Griffin, and we are talking about this invisible disability, how it literally is 100+ different types of things that could be invisible. Again, not being able to see something in somebody, whether it is head trauma or whether it's anxiety and stress and some of these other, I mean, over 100 qualify in this area. And Jill was talking about over a break and a couple times ago that there are some crazy statistics and things that have been happening around tracking disability. And I had to make sure we circled back around with that. And then we're going to go into food, environment, what's really happening there. And we're going to wind with like some really cool takeaways. So Jill, when we talk about this concept of, you know, tracking disabilities, what's going on there?
So the reason why myself and others believe that the information is unclear is because if estimated about 25% of the US population has a disability and there's about 1 billion people disabled worldwide, the stats differ because if you have an invisible disability, you don't necessarily want to disclose. And there's an estimated that about 10 to 20% of the US pop actually has an invisible disability and they don't disclose. Now, remember,
what's interesting is maybe it's even more, but because they don't want to disclose it.
That's what I'm saying. So the numbers are squishy. So anybody who's doing math out there, the numbers are a little bit squishy. You can do your own research if you want to look at this. But when you think about the idea that where we were saying before the break, if you look at me, I represent as able-bodied. So you may not think with your own bias that I would be a challenge if you had to hire. Now, if you hire me, someone with a vestibular situation, I'm just going to ask you that the lighting isn't like fluorescent and flickering so I don't have a seizure. I'm going to ask to make sure that, you know, my computer screen doesn't have a moiré effect, that I need certain lighting and that, you know, I need certain accommodations. But for the most part, for me, I'm lucky that my condition, you know, peaks at times, but it's always there at the baseline, but it's not chronic anymore at the baseline. So I consider myself very lucky today that I've been able, through the practices that I've done and the work that I've done, both on the food side and the mental side, that I've been able to get some clarity on that. But the thing that we were talking about at the break, which is also really interesting to know, and this is a stat that came out of Adam Grant from Work Life and the TED Collective. I was recently on his show talking about disability in the workplace, is that if you are 20 years old, you have a 1 in 4 chance before you're retired of being disabled, either short-term or long-term. That is an incredible stat. And again, we don't know if this, or I don't know if this is more, but it's being tracked. I also know that for various stats, less than 11% of diversity, equity, and inclusion dollars go against disability. So disability in the workplace is also, again, we have like inspiration porn, like, oh, we're going to hire the person with the visual disability and make ourselves feel good about ourselves. And disability is not a bad word. Disability, like, don't feel bad for us. Like, we're good. It's your inability to deal with what you're seeing or not seeing that makes you uncomfortable.
So if I were to ask you, do you know in companies right now, visible disability versus invisible disability, what would you say the percentages are right now?
Like, I can only follow the percentages of what we have. That's somewhere between 10 and 20% of the US pop does not disclose. So I disclosed, and I was told that I wasn't a team player, that I should have a drink, lighten up. And eventually I was terminated because I couldn't perform. I couldn't go out drinking with you on a boat. So fine. In my next role, I chose not to disclose formally. Mm. In time, I disclosed informally to allies and bosses, but I didn't disclose formally because I had seen it already work against me. So disclosing or not is a personal choice. And if I ever work for someone again, clearly being on these podcasts, I guess I'm going to have to disclose. But I'm okay. That's why I came out. That's why I came out, because it was my hiding that was also once I started disclosing again informally, there are angels everywhere. People were like, how can I help? What do you need? You know, I've had you know, supervisors and executive leadership be like, your eyes don't look all right. Are you okay? Maybe you need to go home. And I've had that. I've also equally had, what do you want me to do with this information?
Because I think that there's more and more coming out around mental health day in companies, making sure, what are you doing for these invisible disabilities, for the people that aren't disclosing it, that, you know, 1 in 4 before they, you know, what'd you say, turn 60?
Before they're 65. Again, short term or long term?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is happening.
This is happening. And Gallup just released their workplace report for 2022, which is really 21 data today, or hit my e-box today. And 44% of the US pop has said that they are more stressed today than they were previously.
So I would say it's definitely higher.
That's the people who felt safe to admit that, right? And that's what it comes back to. So we talked a bit about how this is around empathy. And what this did for me professionally, the first relaunch was getting educated around food and the mind. The more that I studied the impact of anatomy, physiology, and food, and by food, we mean everything from the environment to the food that I put in my body, and understand that when I'm going to go above my watermark, my baseline, when my symptoms are going to get worse. In doing that, I also learned about the brain and mind management. And it is that mind management along with the food and environmental management that I brought. I mean, I never left the job. I just brought in new information where my performance went through the roof. They were like, you're a coach. I mean, I wasn't employed as a coach. I was employed as a strategist, but they were like, great. Your team wants coaching, coach them. Our performance was going gangbusters.
And you're really saying with the change of food and mindset, and
learning how to manage mind. I mean, because look, even a half managed mind is going to get you pretty far, right? So
I love that, a half managed mind. Right? Absolutely, because our minds are, you know, going rogue on us. They're like out there just doing everything. They're doing the crazy stuff.
Yep.
So food-wise, you're recommending, you know, get back onto that healthy food plan, all the processed food. It just pickles our brain, right?
Totally. And again, it is bioindividuality. So everybody is going to have a different response. For me, and with vestibular, making sure that I cleared my gut. So the connection between the gut, the microbiome, and the brain, the vagus nerve that connects. A lot of people with head injuries, once that vagus nerve is disrupted and there is a disruption, right? We know that so much of the thinking, feeling ability comes from our ability in our microbiome, and then it connects with the brain. So I had to make sure that my gut was clean, and it wasn't, because I was working and I was stressed and I was eating processed foods and doing all the things that I thought were like, they looked healthy, you know, because they were low fat or things, you know, things that just did not work for my body. So they said natural, right? Mm-hmm. Or they had artificial additives in them and all of that. So making sure, again, I'm sure many of your listeners know if they're working long, they're a lot of times they're taking something quick to get the nourishment they need. And very often, unfortunately, that ends up being a product that is not good for us, especially when we have a situation like a brain injury. I also then made sure that for me, for my body, very anti-inflammatory. So I had to eliminate a lot of food from my diet as a permanent, I mean, once in a while it slips in if I go to someone's house or I go to a restaurant, but for the most part for me, it is a non-negotiable, because me consuming that means that my brain's not going to work tomorrow. And I don't know about you, but I need my brain to be able to work and think.
What would you say are the critical foods that you have to stay away from?
Gluten, dairy, sugar, egg, some forms of nuts, mostly peanuts, wheat, in addition to gluten, right? And then many grains, depending on how they've been processed. So very anti-inflammatory and making sure.
You're really hitting all of them. I mean, those are all pretty much the anti-inflammatory.
Traveling and eating a pain in the butt. You know, I used to live on hard-boiled eggs. I ain't my friends. So really having to eliminate that. Again, that doesn't mean you need to do that. Anybody who's listening, it means that's what I had to do because of the amount of inflammation. So the way I looked at it is if my ring is tight, I'm inflamed. It's the easiest way of knowing. So if my hand is inflamed, there's probably going to be inflammation around my brain, which, and again, I'm sort of using metaphors here, people. I'm not saying there's real inflammation around my brain, but I'm saying if my rings are tight, therefore there's inflammation or swelling in my body, is going to impact my ability to think and not have brain fog. It's super simple.
It's just a very simple way for you.
Way of checking. For yourself. And then again, go talk to your doctor and figure
out. Absolutely. And for those that are in I'm in a very right now hot environment and I feel very swollen. Yes. I'm like, okay, let's not take it to the, what your body is.
We're not saying that you have inflammation if it's humid and where you live and you're swollen.
Yeah.
We're
just know
on a regular basis.
You're thinking about this. Yet again, another reason to eat healthy. Well, I want to ask you, so right now when you're working with your clients, what do you start out with? How do you start helping them right out of the gates? Because I know you have an incredible process.
Yeah. So I work on what's called career strategy. So you and I are talking so much about this well-being piece, which is such an important part of the work that I do, but I am a trained strategist. So I'm going to get in there with my clients and really help them. We don't find our purpose. It's not lost. We choose our purpose based on our strengths, our skills, our values, our belief systems. And we get super clear on when our talents are in action, our uniqueness is in action, how is it that we're showing up? We then do so much on mindset. We think about your future self. We think about your state of play. We think about who do you need to be in order to create that change, that impact, get that job, get that raise, right? We're looking at that.
And the thing that you just said, people trying to find the purpose instead, choose it. Don't try to find something, choose it. That is so good.
Yeah, you gotta choose it based on who you are. And look, you can choose it now and then relaunch yourself in a couple of years and choose something else. It doesn't necessarily need to be
true.
For life. For me, my chosen purpose is to inspire people to what's possible. So
which I absolutely love. How do people find you? How can they have you help them to find that purpose?
So it's the purpose and the strategy, because I roll up my sleeves and get dirty with you. We look at how are you showing up in your day? How are you presenting? We look at executive presence, all of that. You can go to jillgriffincoaching.com and see how I work. And again, it's a mixture of mindset, method, getting into action. And then I call it math, because we got to look at the results we're creating. So,
Mindset, method, math. This is why you and I get along so well. Yes. And get ready, to get into the mess so that you get these clear messages that are going to be coming to you. So I got to say, it has been such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you again. We'll have it in our show notes. You can go check her out. Jill Griffin is amazing. And again, what a story today. And so next week, we are going to be taking this to the next level in terms of global relaunches that are impacting us, business relaunches and personal relaunches. And we're going to actually go into invisible, that stress that's hitting us, but we're not like acknowledging it. And we're going to go there. So I look forward to seeing everyone next week. Live now, love now, relaunch now. There's never been a better time. See you next week.
We thank you, our listeners, for joining us for the relaunch with Hillary DeCesar. We hope that you leave today's show with inspiration and tools to help you achieve your own relaunch. Until we talk again, have a week filled with self-love, joy, and success.